We don't at this time have any evidence or any intelligence to indicate there's a connection with terrorism.
19 people are injured when a man drives his SUV into a crowded Australian shopping market. It's Friday, December 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the U.S. sanctions a leading Burmese general for attacks against Rohingyas. We'll look back at President Trump's first year in foreign policy, and what will China's economic course look like in 2018? That's all on today's VOA Asia. Authorities in Melbourne, Australia, say a man arrested for injuring 19 people when he deliberately drove his vehicle into a crowd of pedestrians has no known links to terrorism. Shane Patton, the acting chief commissioner for Victoria State Police, told reporters Thursday the suspect was a 32-year-old Australian citizen of Afghan descent. He said the man does have a known history of drug use and mental health issues.
He is a 32-year-old Australian citizen of Afghan descent. He is a person who is known to Victoria Police. He has historical assault matters. He is not currently on any bail or any corrections order or anything of the like, and has a history of drug use as well as mental health issues. We understand, as I said, this still is very early days, that he is on a mental health plan and receiving treatment for a mental illness. We are working through those to clarify that.
The suspect was arrested at the scene by an off-duty policeman after he crashed a sport utility vehicle into a signal pole outside a cable car stop. Patton said the 24-year-old man, or a 24-year-old man, who was spotted recording the incident with his cell phone camera and later found to be carrying a bag of knives, was also arrested. The incident occurred on a major road in downtown Melbourne as pedestrians were doing last-minute Christmas shopping. One witness told a Melbourne radio station she saw people flying everywhere as the SUV plowed through the crowd. Patton said there is no preliminary indication that either man had any connection to international terrorism, but the investigation is ongoing.
We don't at this time have any evidence or any intelligence to indicate there's a connection with terrorism. And I just want to reiterate that. At this time, we don't have any evidence or intelligence to indicate a connection with terrorism. Having said that, however, we continue to support this investigation with our counter-terrorism command to ensure that there isn't that connection and that there is no ongoing threat. We have no evidence to suggest there is, but from a completeness perspective, that's what we're doing.
Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said four of the 19 victims are in critical condition. One of the victims is a toddler who suffered a serious head injury. Thursday's incident is the second of its kind to take place this year in Australia's second largest city. Six people were killed when a car drove into a group of pedestrians back in January. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream, that is, at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. UN chief disappointed that Myanmar barred human rights envoy. UN denies arrested Reuters reporters had given it information. Pakistan rejects claims convicted Indian spy will be executed. Chinese court convicts 44 Taiwanese nationals in telecom fraud scheme. And after delays, ground broken for Thailand-China railway project. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. The United States has imposed sanctions on a Myanmar army chief who faces accusations of leading an ethnic cleansing campaign against Rohingya Muslims. Myanmar General Maung Maung So was among 52 accused human rights abusers worldwide on whom sanctions were placed by the U.S. Department of Treasury. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the United States is taking a strong stand against human rights abuse and corruption globally by shutting these bad actors out of the U.S. financial system. Treasury is freezing their assets and publicly denouncing the egregious acts they've committed, sending a message that there is a steep price to pay for their misdeeds. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the sanctions would help ensure the security of the United States and its allies. He said they also show America's commitment to protecting human rights and fighting corruption. Former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, who the U.S. said created an assassination squad, which was directed to kill individuals he determined to be threats to his authority, was also sanctioned. Sanctions were also placed on Mukhtar Hamid Shah, a Pakistani surgeon whom government police believe is involved in the removal and trafficking of human organs. Gulnara Karimova, the daughter of Uzbekistan's late dictator, was also targeted with sanctions after being charged with abetting criminal activities of an organized crime organization with assets worth more than $1.3 billion. The sanctions were imposed under the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, which authorizes the U.S. government to sanction foreign individuals for human rights violations and corruption, with the intent of allowing the United States to hold foreign individuals accountable. Happening now in Asia, at least 29 people were killed and 26 injured in a major blaze at a fitness center in the southern Korean city of Jincheon. Officials said that 20 victims were found at a public sauna and others elsewhere in the building that houses a fitness center, public bath, and restaurants. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. The UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly adopted a resolution that rejects the U.S. decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and to move its embassy there. The measure was adopted with more than a two-thirds majority of the 172 nations that voted. 128 nations supported the measure, 9 voted against it, 35 countries abstained. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley repeated the Trump administration's threat that it would note who voted against its policy and, in her words, "We'll remember it when we are called upon to once again make the world's largest contribution to the United Nations."
When a nation is singled out for attack in this organization, that nation is disrespected. What's more, that nation is asked to pay for the privilege of being disrespected. In the case of the United States, we are asked to pay more than anyone else for that dubious privilege. Unlike in some UN member countries, the United States government is answerable to its people. As such, we have an obligation to acknowledge when our political and financial capital is being poorly spent. We have an obligation to demand more for our investment.
Since taking office in January, President Donald Trump has broken with the foreign policy of his predecessor by recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, refusing to certify Iran's compliance with the nuclear treaty, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords, and taking a more aggressive stance toward North Korea. As VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo tells us, views about these foreign policy departures are mixed. Some are welcoming the forceful projection of American power on the world stage, while others are criticizing what they see as a dangerous course for the United States.
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
It was an announcement that took many by surprise.
There is no alternative to the two-state solution. There is no plan B.
President Donald Trump's move, which unleashed protests, was a reversal of long-standing U.S. policy that Jerusalem's status must be decided by negotiation. It was also an example of how he's broken with former President Barack Obama.
This is the nature of the Trump presidency. It's not conventional. It's not always policy-based.
on North Korea, the Iran nuclear deal, the Paris climate change agreement, Trump has moved the U.S. in a different direction.
You've seen that very clearly with regard to the war against ISIS in both Iraq and Syria. And ISIS has nearly been wiped out, actually, in both of those countries. You're seeing that with regard to North Korea, where there's a much more proactive, aggressive approach. Also on the Iran front as well.
While this forceful approach is what Trump promised his supporters, some critics say complicated situations like Iran require the diplomatic tool.
In the 70 years since the end of World War II, America has relied on two key tools for its security and standing in the world. One has been the strength of its diplomacy, and the other has been the strength of its armed forces. You're taking one of the tools off the table, the diplomatic tools, without really putting a well-thought-through and crafted policy as an alternative.
The United States will withdraw.
President Trump's other big break with his predecessor was in June, when he withdrew from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, making the United States the only country to reject the global pact.
To move away from the Paris Accord on climate without anything to replace it is, you know, a step back 10 years rather than looking at where we're going to be as a society and as an economy 10 years plus.
Despite this move, other observers say Trump has made fewer foreign policy changes than many expected based on his campaign rhetoric.
This is actually quite a traditional U.S. foreign policy approach, in that President Trump clearly rejects the idea of isolationism. Many analysts thought that this administration would be isolationist, that you would see America turning away from the world. You haven't seen that at all.
Disruptor or traditionalist, Trump's foreign policy moves are likely to keep adversaries and allies vigilant and even wary as the president enters his second year in office. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Four people were killed and 11 others were missing Thursday after a ferry with hundreds on board capsized in stormy weather off the Philippines. More than 200 passengers and crew were plucked to safety when the Mercraft 3 keeled over in heavy seas. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. Senior Chinese leaders concluded a three-day annual economic planning conference earlier this week, the first such conference since October 19th's Chinese Communist Party Congress that vowed to pursue President Xi Jinping's wish to shift from an era of high growth to high-quality development. The Xinhua news agency said Thursday that the world's second-largest economy is setting sail toward a new phase in development. It said the focus on quality is a shift from the rapid growth the country embarked on in the 1970s. It will be reflected in innovative manufacturing, a more secure financial system, a more open and green economy, more affordable housing, and a better life for the people. The state-run Global Times editorialized Thursday that national confidence is on the rise and China's growth rate can be expected to outperform the West, including the United States. Scott Kennedy is director of the Project on Chinese Business and Political Economy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. He told VOA's Victor Beatty that Mr. Xi is in charge and the country will continue on the path he has set.
But at the same time, they are concerned about the pace of growth and also some stress on the economy in terms of liquidity and debts. and they want to make sure that the economy continues to grow. So I think the economic conditions macroeconomic policy are going to be slightly looser than we expected going into this meeting.
The government will push forward with what are called structural supply-side reforms, maintain prudent, neutral monetary policy next year as it looks to improve the quality of growth. What does all that mean?
I think it means that China's trying to deleverage the amount of debt they have and also deal with the overcapacity they have in infrastructure-related sectors while continuing to promote rapid to medium-paced growth somewhere around 6.5% next year and try and balance reforming the economy but keeping growth going at the same time.
At a Politburo meeting earlier this month, top leaders pledged to deepen structural reforms and curb systemic risks from the country's growing debt pile while maintaining steady growth next year. Are these achievable goals?
On the surface, yes, they are achievable. China can reduce some of the risks that they have in their economy and keep the economy growing. What I don't think they have fully grasped yet is that to make the economy grow much more efficiently, they need to reduce the amount of government intervention in the economy. And this plan calls for the government to still play a micromanaging role and state-owned enterprises to play a large role in the economy so they can achieve some short-term goals, but the longer-term goal of restructuring the role between state and society, I think, is something that's going to elude them.
According to the French press agency, President Xi stamped his authority over China's economy at this major meeting that ended Wednesday, which called for reasonable credit expansion, increased imports, and more open markets, and efforts to curb pollution.
I think we'll see a little bit of those things. Certainly, again, they're trying to encourage some growth, but not too fast because they don't want the economy to overheat. They need to deal with the debt problem. And dealing with pollution is obviously an important goal. In terms of openness, I think that's going to be more rhetoric than reality. With all the state intervention they have and with their effort to promote state-owned enterprises and move up the value-added chain on behalf of domestic companies, we may see at the margins opening of some sectors to foreign investment and imports, but nothing dramatic. And given that we're entering the 40th anniversary of the era of reform and opening to the outside world, it's kind of disappointing, I think, where we are in terms of the amount of intervention that we have still in the economy.
Scott Kennedy said he gives China good marks for good economic management in the year that is just ending, after the volatility and risk of financial crisis that permeated in 2015 and 2016. He said while China faces headwinds, such as overcapacity and housing market debt, there are many countries in the world who would rather have China's economic problems. This news from VOA Asia. A North Korean soldier safely defected to South Korea Thursday. He is the second soldier to seek refuge in the South in just over a month. South Korean officials say the man crossed the heavily guarded DMZ, appearing in front of a guard post Thursday morning. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. What's the worst traffic you've ever encountered? If you're a driver, maybe you would say Bangkok or perhaps Mumbai. People here in Washington would disagree and say it's the Beltway at rush hour or 95 South any Thursday afternoon. But you know how frustrating it can be to sit at a traffic light for what seems like an endless amount of time, and that amount of time seems to stretch if you really have to be somewhere. But now, as VOA's George Putich tells us, scientists who study traffic patterns say the situation can be improved with smart streetlights.
During the evening rush hour, traffic at this busy intersection in downtown Pittsburgh runs smoothly, with both drivers and pedestrians waiting not more than a minute or two. Instead of timing the lights on the basis of usual traffic patterns, video cameras and radars at each intersection monitor the traffic in real time.
From that information that we take in, the system builds a prediction of when every vehicle it sees through its detection is actually going to arrive at the intersection. And then based on that prediction, we build a what's called a timing plan, a plan for how the green's going to get distributed to each approach in real time and begin executing that plan.
The system was created by a company called CERTRAC, stemming from a project started at Carnegie Mellon University's Robotic Institute. From an original 9 smart streetlights installed in 2013, this area of East Pittsburgh now has 50 interconnected intersections, with another 150 planned during the next 3 years. Calculations show the travel time through the corridor improved by more than 25%.
Not because vehicles were moving faster, but they were stopping 30% fewer times. And when they were stopping, they were idling 40% fewer on average.
Scientists say there is a lot of room for improvement. City buses, private cars, even cell phones may in the future be equipped with dedicated short-range communication, or DSRC devices, that will communicate with smart street lights. They are already experimenting with something that may help handicapped pedestrians safely cross the streets.
It attaches to a smartphone, so that you talk. It talks to the smartphone through Bluetooth, and then it'll talk to the intersection through the DSRC.
Smart streetlights have also been installed in Atlanta, and other U.S. cities are on track to upgrade their streetlights. With self-driving cars already carrying customers throughout Pittsburgh, the city is rapidly becoming a hotbed of advanced traffic technology. George Putich, VOA News, Pittsburgh.
The World Health Organization says that last year, 2016, there were an estimated 216 million cases of the disease malaria in 91 countries. That was an increase of 5 million cases over 2015. Malaria deaths reached 445,000 people in 2016. That's similar to the year before. While some progress has been made against the disease, the mosquito-borne disease continues to kill hundreds of thousands of people each year, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa. Now drug-resistant malaria strains in Southeast Asia could threaten the global fight against the disease. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports.
Once a smuggling stop for Cambodia's Khmer Rouge guerrillas, the Thai border town of Bo Rai has found itself on a new front line against drug-resistant malaria strains that threaten to reverse the global fight to eliminate malaria. The local disease control unit is constantly on the lookout for cases of the mosquito-borne disease. Health workers give weekly blood checkups to malaria patients to make sure they're taking their medication correctly, to limit the chance of the parasites becoming drug-resistant.
What we are concerned about is a contracted patient traveling across countries, risking the spread of the infection, and we cannot fully follow up on them taking the medications properly as they constantly move across the borders between both countries.
Billions of dollars have been spent on increasing public awareness of how to avoid infection and on making diagnosis quicker and cheaper. But the latest malaria drugs are becoming less effective.
Now the parasite is becoming more and more resistant to both the artemisinin and the partner drug component of these combination therapies. And the parasite strains are spreading quite quickly at the moment through Cambodia to the neighboring countries.
The number of malaria cases in Thailand fell to less than 10,000 this year. And the country's health ministry says it has entered the malaria elimination stage. It hopes its efforts will wipe out the disease by 2024. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. Be sure to let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and you can email us, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. For those of you who celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.